Hello, everyone, and welcome to Toonami Therapy on January 7th of 2021. I am Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And we are here to talk about some of the anime and other things we've been watching, some of which air on Toonami. All right, let's jump right into it, I suppose. We're starting with Sword Art Online, episode 91. So we've got it all, like, so everyone's still fighting and stuff, and, Yuki, that girl with the, AIDS, she thinks of her, and then she communicates, or maybe, is it her ghost, or is it just a thought, or, I don't know, but she shows up again, to Asuna. Meanwhile, Kirito is, still in that coma, but then he's having these dreams, and he's met, he meets up with all of his friends, which does not include Klein, but does include Yu-Gi-Oh. So I guess he's more important than Klein to Kirito. He manages to get out of the, he manages to awaken, and he's like, all right, I'm back. Did you miss me? And all the fangirls go, yeah! And everyone else goes, not really. But then he unleashes some super attack that I think we were supposed to believe that Yu-Gi-Oh! Gave him or something. No, Yu-Gi-Oh! I keep saying Yu... that's his name. It sounds like I'm saying the show, like Yu-Gi-Oh! But, And manages to help turn the tide in favor of them, that's our episode.
Yeah, so Kirito is no longer a vegetable, and that means that we can't make any of those jokes about him anymore, unfortunately. But he had to snap out of it sometime. While all his group of fangirls, you know, cheer him on. And they just kind of just stand by and just watch Asuna trying to fight on her own. And they just don't even join in. And then it's all up to Kirito. So it's pretty obvious to see where this is going now. As an episode, I thought it was pretty good. The stuff we're having to do with, you know, Kirito's mind, that was kind of weird, but overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Although technically Kirito is still a vegetable in the real world, I think. Or can he wake up now? Because he was in the virtual world while being a vegetable, as they would say, in the real world. But then he became that in the virtual world also. But now he's back in the virtual world, but I don't know how he is in the real world. Yeah. Only thing I wanted to mention was that, I haven't read it and aren't really interested in it, but apparently that book Ready Player 2, you know, like the sequel to Ready Player 1, actually mentions Sword Art Online in it. Both books are basically just an endless series of references to stuff, but I just thought it was a little interesting, like, oh, well, huh, Sword Art Online is notable enough to get the reference there, although I think it mentioned Evangelion, Bebop, and Robotech in the first book, but those are all older.
What's that even about?
It's about, Ready Player One is, it's not that great, it's about, I've heard it's not very good. Although I admit I haven't read it, but I did listen to this funny podcast called 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back that kind of had the guys read through it. Mike Nelson from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks and a friend, they just like went through the book and kind of commented on it, mostly making fun of how dumb some of the stuff in it was.
What is it?
It's basically it's about how in the future everything is dystopian, except it's actually pretty normal when you objectively look at it. And it's about how there's this sort of network thing that everyone is using called like the Oasis, and then there's a sort of the guy who made it, who was like this super billionaire, set up these like challenges and riddles, and if someone can solve all of them, then they'll need to gain control of it, and they want to stop the bad guys from doing it. So it's about that. They made a movie out of it.
Okay.
The main thing people always say is that the series is just contains like a gazillion references to stuff, like and things. I don't know. 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back, I thought was a pretty funny podcast, at least. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, yay, you got referenced in a not-considered-very-great book. Go Sword Art Online! Anyway, so, that was Sword Art Online. Then we've got Fire Force episode 30. So, let's see. So, they've managed to beat like the monster stuff, but there's still the other bad guys. Unfortunately, evil old Kuniko decides to be evil and joins the bad guys, so that's unfortunate. So they end up not being successful in that part of the mission, and then the bad guys just leave him there because he's the main character, I guess, and they know that they can't kill him yet or at all.
Mm-hmm.
But so then they're trying to do more research, so they decide, let's go to China, and then they go to China. We also find out, because I always knew this series like took place post-apocalyptic thing, but then they show this map of the world and you're like, oh wow, that's really post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, that was, oh, I mean, at that point, if the world is that badly destroyed, like, silly things that these characters get interested in, you know, like, I don't think anything would really matter anymore. Like, everyone would be ultra depressed and fighting for survival, and there wouldn't be any of these moments where people are just clowning around and having fun. The tone of everyone would be so much different, just like it is in real life right now. You don't see people as, just acting stupid like these characters sometimes do. But, this episode was pretty good. And, I guess this Kuniko character, I've been hoping that she was going to join the Heroes team because I thought she was a pretty interesting character, but unfortunately, didn't. So now I still don't know most of the people on the Fire Force team. So,
It's not like the problem is the comedy necessarily. I mean, Neon Genesis Evangelion had a bunch of comedy too. Well, especially in the earlier episodes. Later on, it kind of dropped off. But it's not even the fact that there's like some funny stuff or that people are trying to live normally and stuff. It's the fact that everyone is so trying to live normally, and then you have all these wacky character gags like, hey, I'm a character, and if I get convinced that I'm riding a horse, even if I'm not, I get a super power up. I'm a character who has the gig of constantly accidentally slipping out of my clothing. Wackiness! In, again, this super post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
I'm a character whose gig is that I communicate primarily through blowing on a whistle. Wacky! It's just such a weird tone with so much of the rest of the series.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, tone. You know, it's not so much that they, you know, joke around from time to time. It's just the tone of it you would think would be a lot more serious because, like you said, in Evangelion, once things turned south in the episode 20, in the 20s of the episodes, then you didn't really see any of that pen drinking beer stuff as much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
I can't remember what episode was the one where Asuka and Rei are in the elevator. It's just a completely still frame for a while. Oh, I don't know if that was supposed to be funny, though.
I don't think it was supposed to be. I think it was because, you know, they ran out of money. And but yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes of the whole series. I think that was episode 22. I could be wrong, though.
Now I need to see how long that scene actually went on. Let me see. Let's see. Okay, this clip it says is one and three quarter minutes, but some of it isn't quite there. Okay, here we go. About 18. Let's see. So they basically sit there not moving for about 50 seconds, it looks like.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if that was supposed to be funny or not, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So, then we've got Assassination Classroom, episode 15. So, midterm exams are coming, or some whatever that was. And Kuro-sensei is saying, hey, each one of you who gets the top overall scoring a subject gets to shoot off one of my tentacles during your next assassination attempt. You know, as kind of an incentive. So they study. And actually, that's most of the episode, really. There is a part where we find out that the other class A is getting like these super tutors to try to improve things, and they end up making this bet between them and class E that whichever one does worse will have to do what the other says. But mostly it's really just studying.
Yeah. I wanted to point out that this is another case of where the tone should be a lot different. Like, if it's really so bad that Kuro-sensei's going to destroy the world in a few months, you would think that the characters wouldn't be so buddy-buddy with him and be like, oh, man, I'm learning so much. You know, I mean, I don't think it really matters whether you can figure out, you know, the derivative of x squared or whatever, if if the world's going to blow up in, you know, 6 months or whenever he said he was going to do it. So, yeah, I think that there's Assassination Classroom, the concept needs to it needed work, and I think that's why I don't think I'm ever gonna really like it. I think the concept needed to be more or it needed to be better thought out. That's what it needed.
Well, in terms of making sure to study, I mean, Kuro-sensei did give them the incentive in saying that if they do well enough, then they can shoot off his tentacles, which makes it way harder for him to, you know, move around and stuff. So, At least in this specific instance, there was that as a motivation. Personally, I've never really minded that so much because the show is, for the most part, a comedy. It's not like Fire Force is an action series that has some comedy in it. Whereas I think this is much more of, it's not a pure comedy series because there is like some like, you know, action or plot stuff, but it is primarily comedic. So I'm just like, yeah, it's okay. It's still kind of, as long as I'm enjoying it and such.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's Assassination Classroom. That's all of our Toonami stuff. We'll be having Attack on Titan next week, the start of the final season, although it's looking like they're going to split the season up into two. I don't know if that's been officially announced, but they've mentioned that this, at least, group of episodes is going to be 16. And having read most of the manga after this point, I can say there is no way they are going to get that into 16 episodes. And the thing is, even if they were going to try, they would say, okay, we'll just cut a bunch of this stuff out. We'll really go through this stuff fast. From what I've heard, I have not watched the new season yet, but I have seen what people say about it. They are not going at that speed. They are going at like a more brisk speed than previous seasons, but not fast enough that you would be able to get all the stuff into the 16 episodes. So most likely they're going to do 16. They'll go on a break and then they'll come back with some more episodes later and say, oh, it's still part of the season. It's still the third season. No, fourth season. This is the fourth season.
Of Attack on Titan.
Yeah. Like how they, took the final season of Breaking Bad, just split it in half and go, hey, it's all one season. There's eight months between them.
Speaking of that, I just needed to complain for a moment, and I've probably said this before, but I still have to say it. Breaking Bad should be called Breaking Badly. Breaking Bad is bad grammar. So just wanted to throw that in there.
I think it was, I haven't seen the show, but my understanding was that the term Break Bad actually might be correct in this case, because I don't think the bad is modifying the verb breaking. I think he is saying that it's like Break Bad is in like, in the phrase become bad. Break is being used sort of as some sort of expression to mean become, like, you know, you break something and become bad in doing so, or like, you know, like you break the bad in this case is, I think, a noun that is being modified by the verb, not an adverb that is modifying the verb.
Yeah, actually that's a good point. So I didn't think of it that way. I just always thought, okay, things are breaking badly, so that's what that means. So, yeah, if it's the way you say it is, then that does make a little bit of sense. Okay.
And there is, for the record, between the end of part, quote-unquote, part one of the final season and, quote-unquote, part two of the final season, there were 11 months. Look, just call it another season.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we got that. And then we'll be moving on to our non-Toonami shows. We have Ghost in the Shell, episode 40. Let's see. Most of the episode is some of the less important members of the team playing poker, and one of them, Saito, gives his backstory about how he was a sniper who was at war with the Japanese, but ended up going up against Major and some of the other members who would later become Section 9, but she managed to outsmart him and capture him and made him work for her, except then he said, when someone said, that seemed like the plot of a movie I saw, he said, oh yeah, I just made the whole thing up.
Yeah, that was funny.
And then he apparently loses the hand and just kind of leaves. Then one of the Tachikoma looks at it and finds out he actually had the winning hand and is left wondering, oh, well, wait, does that mean the story was true? Which yeah. Was kind of a unfortunately predictable ending.
Yeah.
As soon as he like started to say, oh, I just made it up. I knew there was going to be some part where it was saying, or was it real?
Yeah, I thought the poker parts and the poker parts of the episode and the Tachikomas, that was all pretty entertaining. I found the war scenes to be rather boring. So,
I kind of liked them, if only because it was showing the Major and Bato before they really knew each other well. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Although, again, we have no idea if it's actually true or not.
Right.
Okay. So, the stuff with the Tachikoma are always entertaining. We should have.
Yeah.
Why don't we have another episode that just focuses on them? The one that just focused on them was one of the best episodes of the first season.
Or how about a Tachikoma spinoff series where it's all about the Tachikomas? That would be interesting.
It might. Although I worry if we get a whole series about them, it would be like the case that you see with some characters who are popular and then get their own spinoff, and then people say, ooh, I mean, I like this character, but a whole series of them isn't so great. You know, as they say, it's like sugar. It's really fun when you get it in doses, but it's not very good for you if you get too much of it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then we got Yashihime. There is actually no episode that aired last week, but that's okay because we saw the episode that aired the week before that and just didn't cover it because we were busy with our year-end stuff. So I guess we can quickly discuss Yashihime episode 13. Miroku and Sango show up. That's all I really remember about the episode.
Yeah, we wanted them to show up, but now we'd be... it's funny, everyone wanted them to show up, and then once they do show up, we end up with more questions than we do answers, because everyone noticed that Miroku and Sango appeared to have one less child than they had in the first place. So it's like, okay, what happened to that other child? And we still don't really get any idea about, like, you would have thought they would have said something about Inuyasha Kagome. I'm just gotten to the point where it's just like, I'm just used to, okay, this episode is going to be about defeating a random bad guy, monster of the week, so to speak, and we're not going to find much out. And I'm hoping for more plot advancement than we're going to get. So, yeah, that's where we're at with that.
Yeah, no, you'll notice how they deliberately kept Moraha away from the main plot of the episode, because that means they wouldn't have to actually have her interact with Miroku and Kagome, which would actually give us some possible answers.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they show up, but then, like you said, we still don't get much in the way of answers, and there's not really anything about them that makes it important that those were there. Sorry, did I say Miroku and Kagome? I meant Miroku and Sango. But that, like, rests on them being those characters. It could have just... Well, Sango barely shows up at all. She could have just been cut out. And Miroku could have just been any random monk that was just trying to train.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're, I assume, at least halfway through the series, and it seems like we're just not getting things. And, I mean, I saw someone mention, well, you know, when you get down to it, most of Inuyasha was just kind of going up against disposable enemies. And I guess you can say that's true, but with Inuyasha, it wasn't such of a clear matter of, look, we just want to know what happened with the characters in the past. Stop teasing us with this. At least, at least in like the original Inuyasha, you can say, well, you know, you can't have them beat Daraku yet because that would be the end of the series. So,
yeah. Yeah, you're right about that.
But I would also say that Inuyasha just went on too long anyway. So saying, well, it's like the original series and that, I'm like, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean you have to replicate the flaws of the original series. You know, I wonder what I can really say is the longest running series that I don't think at least somewhat overstayed its welcome. Like, what would that be, even? It just popped into my mind, and I don't know what I would say. I still kind of like One Piece, but it's, One Piece's problem isn't exactly that I think as a whole it's gone on too long. It's just I think the individual arcs go on too long.
Yeah.
If they had been shortened and maybe one or two even removed, I would have liked it more. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Why do I ask questions to myself that I don't know the answer to? Okay. So, yeah, we've got that. That was Yashahime. Then we have Returning ReZero. Episode 39, we are back from a break. So here is the second part of the second season, which in retrospect, maybe I should have mentioned at the start of the podcast, but. So let's see. So basically, Otto and Subaru talk and apparently come up with a plan that I assume is going to work because we don't get to see what it was. He shows up to Roswell and makes a bet with him that Subaru will manage to take over, will manage to solve everything in this go-around. And I'm a little surprised Roswell never doesn't ask the obvious question of, well, how do I know this? You haven't made this bet with me 10 times. but he takes it Subaru goes to Emilia and manages to try to figure out what's going on with there. It turns out Puck has been trying to actually break the contract because he's sealing her memories or something. So he says he kind of just tells Emilia, well, I know I'm the adorable mascot character, and maybe I'll show up again, because again, adorable mascot character, and leaves, which leaves her depressed. Then she seems to get memories of something back, and then disappears, but then shows up at the place, you know, the testing thing, and Subaru's there and wants to talk to her, and that's basically our episode.
I'm gonna be kind of obvious to you. I thought it was pretty good.
So did I.
I actually enjoyed this episode. There's some of the things that I still have problems with, like why that Otto guy has become so important, and a little bit of confusion about what this test is that Subaru has to complete. It still doesn't make much sense to me, but for the most part, I thought it was a pretty entertaining episode and probably the best we've seen in this season.
Honestly, what really surprises me is I think the opening, the beginning stuff of this episode should have been the ending of the previous episode. It would have been such a better thing if it had, if we had included the extra stuff with Otto and ended with Subaru bursting into Roswell and like saying, "I want to make a bet with you," or something, or whatever he said. I was thinking, well, that's a good place. You could have just cut it there, and that would have gotten people interested for the next season, and it seems like stuff is moving. But honestly, if anything, they could have at least finished the scene with Otto. It's weird that they cut it like that, but but yes, this was a quite good episode. A lot of stuff happened. the one thing I am wondering though, because Subaru seems so determined, this is going to be the last loop, and I'm wondering, okay, is that going to actually work or not? Because I would prefer not to go through many more loops. But on the other hand, it does make me wonder, how is he going to get through everything like this? I mean, I saw someone say, well, it's like getting, it's like dying constantly before even reaching the midway point of Demon Souls, and then just saying, declaring, on this run, I'm going to go to the end of the game without dying.
That reminds me of how I used to think I was going to make it through a Mario game without dying, which, but I could do that with the Super Mario Brothers 1, but I used to think, oh, I'm going to do it this time, Super Mario Brothers 3, I'm going to make it through the whole way without getting killed, and of course, that would never happen, and it was an exercise in futility. I can do the original Mario, Super Mario Bros. Without dying once, but the thing about that is that it's usually if I don't finish it without dying once, then I'm not going to, because that probably means I got hit by something in the last level, and now I gotta try to get through the Hammer Brother without fireballs. So that is, in fact, I was playing it just a few weeks ago, and I screwed up on something stupid right before I was about to finish it. So then I had like 11 lives left, and I lost all 11 lives trying to get to the end. So, yeah, that last level can be tricky.
Is that, I know I can beat it without losing any life, but that requires me entailing both of the warp pipe shortcuts.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but to explain the test thing, from what I understand, so there's three. So the goal is, if they get to the inner sanctum or whatever the place is, you have to pass by three tests, but only people of mixed blood can do it or whatever. So, well, that Subaru could do it because he got some extra thing from Echidna, but she apparently removed it. It's not clear if she put it back or not, but so you got to pass these three trials. So we know the first one somehow involves having to face something in your past, because we had that whole episode with Subaru and his parents and stuff, because that was what he had to bypass there. And Amelia was not able to bypass whatever hers was. So that's right now what they need to do. If Amelia can get through that, then she can, well, try the next two. And we don't know what those are. For Subaru, we just saw him seeing all those alternate worlds where that had gone on after he died. So we don't know what that would be for Amelia or anything. So we've got that. So basically, they have to do that. That's the thing that makes me you wonder why Subaru is so confident, because how, even if he can figure out, okay, Amelia is remembering her past, that'll let her get past this, how are you going to know? Well, she'll be able to go through the next test, even though I'm not really sure what it is, because she hasn't been dying, so I don't know how it would take, what kind of thing it would take for her there.
Yeah.
But yes, it was a good episode. It's gotten me a lot more excited for the second half of the season.
Yeah.
By the way, one thing I was curious about. So remember how earlier there was that episode where Otto says about how Subaru is his friend, but he uses the Japanese word Eugene for friend, and Subaru gets confused and thinks he's talking about someone named Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was actually curious, so I looked up the dub, because they have the first half of the second season is fully dubbed now, to see how they played it. And basically they had Otto say friend in need, and then Subaru says, well, wait, who's your friend de need? Which, well, I guess that doesn't, not the greatest thing, but I mean, you have to translate it somehow.
Yeah.
It's a pun that doesn't exist in English. They did the best they could. Yeah. At least, actually, it still makes more sense to someone, the English one, if you don't, because the subtitles do not explain that pun to you at all, if you watch it subbed. So then you're going, it was only because I looked it up that I was able to figure it out. So if you watch the dub, at least it's a little bit of a forced thing, but it at least, you know, makes some, it at least, you can get the gist of it better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is ReZero. I am quite excited for the next episode, really. So, I guess we can give our top threes.
Yeah. Number one, number two, number three. I'm trying to remember everything we saw this week. My short-term memory is so bad. I can remember things from 25 years ago easily, but I cannot remember things that happened just a few minutes ago.
What even would have been 25 years ago? Oh, I'm so old that I can remember things 25 years ago. Oh, yeah. I hate phrases like that. It reminds me of how I'm getting older. I'm experiencing my one-third of life crisis. Or is it even that? I think I'm past one-third, but I'm not halfway through. Would this be my 5/12 life crisis?
Let's see.
I mean, do you want me to go?
Yeah, you go ahead, and then I'll figure mine out.
Okay. So, so number three for me would be, that would be Ghost in the Shell. Number two would be, kind of surprising given the fact I spend most of the time dunking on it, but I did like Fire Force, even if I do have a problem with the tone. I mean, I can still kind of ignore that it's, well, the thing about Fire Force's tone is that while it seems it doesn't seem to fit with the world, they don't really spend enough time on the world status for it to really feel too much like a problem. Like, if it was constantly showing people all these horrible things happening and then switching back to wackiness, that would be a problem, but they don't really dwell on that part of it. And then for first place would have to be ReZero. I really did like this episode. I am excited to see this show back.
Yes, so my number one pick, my number three pick will be Fire Force. Number two will be ReZero. And number one will be Sword Art Online. I'm excited to see the dramatic conclusion to the Kirito Vegetable Saga, and yeah, that ought to be fun to find out. So, yeah.
Speaking of a midlife crisis, Alicization has been almost half of the series.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's like, wow, that went on for, that's gone on for a long time. I wonder what is even the series, what's it going to be after Alicization? I know the light novels are still going on.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Let me check. It looks like, I don't really know what the, all I'm looking at is like the, it looks like the next big thing is something called Unital Ring. Mm. There's at least multiple, like the volumes, like there's Unital Ring 1, Unital Ring 2, 3, it goes up to 4. Alicization, how many, it's so surprising to look, if you look at the, volume titles, you see Alicization Beginning, Alicization Running, Alicization Turning, Alicization Rising, Alicization Dividing, and then there's Uniting, Invading, Exploding, Awakening, and Lasting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of Alicization.
Yep.
Oh boy. In fact, actually, oh wow, with the anime, Alicization is almost half of it. For in the light novels, of the first 18 up through 18 volumes, Alicization is literally half of it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a very long one. Wow. Okay. So that's been our coverage of the anime stuff. You can find our past episodes at unamitherapy.podbean.com. And, well, let's move on to Star Trek. It was away for a while.
Pause for just a second? Can we pause for a second so I can get a drink?
Sure. Okay. We took a brief break there, but we're back. And what a perfect time to do it, because we were talking about... We were about to go into Star Trek anyway. So yes, we are on Star Trek The Next Generation, episode 6, I think it was. Well, it's the one called Where No One Has Gone Before, anyway. Uh-huh. So, which has no real relevance or reference to the original series episode Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Uh-huh.
So... the plot of this one is a guy comes over to the Enterprise in order to try to dramatically improve the engines, but everyone's kind of confused because his explanations don't seem to make much sense, but they apparently worked in for the other ships. So he gets to work with his assistant, this sort of weird alien guy, and they end up launching the Enterprise so far away it would take them, what did they say, 150 years to make it home?
300.
300, okay. It was, yeah. Now I'm suddenly, in something that I wish I had remembered what it was, how far away Voyager was from making it home at the start of the series. I mean, you know, obviously they get bumps along, they get some jumps along the way, especially, you know, the part at the end where they're just like, well, the show's over, let's just get them back to Earth now.
Yeah.
So there's that. They try to do it to bring them back, but that actually just ends up making them go farther away in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So far, in fact, that apparently in that part of space, you can think about things and it makes them happen real. That was kind of weird. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but anyway, you find out that the secret to all this stuff is that the guy doesn't actually know all this stuff. He just was, it turns out it was just his alien companion called the Traveler who could do all that. So they're able to get him, to help them get home. by, you know, having everyone make sure, because thoughts have power to either think about his well-being or just focus on what they're doing, and that managed to get them back, but the traveler disappears, and but not before giving some lavish praise to Wesley, because, I mean, it's not like he wasn't already established as being some kind of crazy genius for his age. This is then gets put then he becomes an acting ensign and gets to help fly the ship around.
Yeah, I didn't get the part with Wesley at the end. Like that didn't make much sense. I actually enjoyed this episode probably the most of any so far. That scene where Picard almost jumps out into space. He's like, he takes a step out the door and he's like, almost falls out into space. That was pretty funny. What I was thinking was, like, they all had to focus their thoughts into getting back home. And I'm thinking, this is just like the time Goku had to get the spirit bomb powered up. So he needed everyone on Earth to give their energy to him. And it was just like that. It felt like the same thing. So, yeah, that was pretty funny.
There is a key difference. Picard did not spend the full episode doing it.
Didn't it take like 5 episodes in the original?
I don't think it was that long, well, let me think. I know in the original, when he used it to try to fight Frieza, and that actually took a full episode at least. I distinctly remember that because I was at school and I was doing something. I can't remember what. I probably was playing Magic the Gathering or something, and because at the club. And then I was like, oh, I want to make sure I get back home so I can watch Dragon Ball Z. And someone said, oh, well, I mean, it's just Goku charging up the spirit bomb the whole episode. I'm like, I don't think that's the case. I go back. I watch it. Wow, that was one episode of Goku firing off the spirit bomb the whole time. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the one when they went later on when he was fighting Kid Boo, though. I think that one did take 1 or 2 episodes, although there were a bunch of false starts where, you know, people aren't taking him seriously, and then they end up getting Mr. Satan to bring it up, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, sure, go, let's do it. But yeah, this was definitely this was the best one so far. There were some issues with it. I could have done without, like, the Traveler talking about how amazing Wesley is and such. It's
that he's like Mozart. That was the comparison he made, that Wesley is like Mozart. Like, really? Really?
Yeah. The interesting thing is, when I originally watched these, when I was way younger, I actually was thinking, oh, cool, he gets to, he's gonna be one of the flight people, so he'll have more of a reason to be on the show. And I'm like, well, I mean, and I, looking at this, I can still think, I mean, I guess it does make it so they don't have to try to force him into episodes as much, but it still is just... It's like the level of Wesley almost worshiping this episode is annoying. And you can definitely see why people say that that he's considered a Mary Sue. I mean, as people have pointed out, Gene Roddenberry's middle name is Wesley.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently that was... other than that, I mean, there was some good stuff. It was and maybe the pacing could have been better at some points, but it was an interesting situation. We got a kind of interesting alien. There's some good mystery stuff. So on the whole, I would agree that while this episode still had some flaws, it was, I think, this was definitely the best of the episodes we've seen so far, if we count Encounter at Farpoint as one episode. I'm Not sure if I would rank it above the first half of Encounter at Far Point, but compared to it as a whole, this is definitely better than that.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I don't want to give it too high of a score because I know what episodes are coming later. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give it a 7.
Yes, that's exactly what I'll give it also, because I definitely need to give this something higher than Encounter at I should give it something higher than Encounter at Far Point. I mean, I was kind of trying to decide between 6 and 7, and I'm like, yeah, I should go 7, so it's higher than that, because I gave that a 6. I mean, I could have gone with a 6.5, but I'm so worried that because I was like thinking, oh, maybe I should have given a 2.5 to Code of Honor instead of a 2. But then I'm just thinking, no, I can't do that because I know what's going to happen. Once they start giving half scores because I can't decide between two of them, then I won't be able to decide between the half score and the full score. So I'll start giving 3/4 and then 7/8. And then before we know it, I'll probably be giving scores like a 12 out of 32. Which doesn't even make sense because a 12 out of 30 2 should be turned into the more simplified fraction of 3 out of 16. I'm sorry, not 6 out of 16. No, 3 out of 8.
3 out of 8.
Yeah. Yeah. It should have been.
Or maybe use some imaginary numbers. You know, you could have X plus 3i.
I can never think of imaginary numbers without remembering that great Calvin and Hobbes comic where Calvin is doing homework and it's just basic arithmetic, except Hobbes is trying to give him like help, except Hobbes doesn't know it either. So there's like some simple question. It's something like, I don't know, like 12 plus 4. And Hobbes is saying, oh, that's a hard one. You need imaginary numbers for that. And Calvin says, like what? And Hobbes says, oh, you know, like 11d12. Okay, so that's where no one has gone before. So that's 7 out of 10 for both of us.
Yep.
Okay, so there's that. That's the first one we've gotten the same before. So yeah, that's where no one has gone before. A good, if not amazing, but a good outing. I'll say that. So, anything else you wanted to say about it?
No, I don't. Nope.
Okay.
That's about it.
All right. Yeah, we'll see that. Next week we have, what episode do we have next week? I should check just see if it's something, if it's Lonely Among Us. Oh, wow, I can't even remember much about that episode. So I guess we'll check out that one.
Uh-huh.
And, right. So we will once again see you next week.
Bye.